Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
This is the Ron Edmondson Leadership Podcast.
Well, thanks for listening to the Ron Edmondson Leadership Podcast hosted by Lifeway. Ron's mission is to help church leaders become better leaders. I'm your host, Nate Edmondson. Pops, today's subject is something I'm excited to talk about because it's something I've experienced firsthand and that I need help with. So you say, I know that you're a big advocate of delegation.
Yes.
But I also know that there are some things that you choose to invest a lot of time in and that you tend to control more. So help us think about what a leader needs to control.
Yeah. And I'm a little bit cringy when I hear that word control, because I think that's the opposite of leadership in a lot of ways. And so I would rather empower people. I would rather delegate responsibility. In fact, I'm looking forward to the day when I just delegate everything and all I got to do is show up and say, hey, what's up, you know, and be the cheerleader. But so I believe in that. But there are a few things that I think are incredibly important to that the leader hold on to, that the leader not get too far gone from, you know, that they keep speaking into. So I'll share five things that I try to control as a senior leader. And maybe there's a better word than control. I just try to make sure they're happening, you know. But the first one is vision. You know, I believe senior leadership it's critically important that we be protectors of the vision of the organization, that it's always front in people's mind, that I keep reinforcing it in front of people. So I think it's a part of a leader's job to control the vision, at least that the vision is protected and that you're going after the vision. And I would say, you know, in a church context, that becomes also equally important for if you have elders, for example, if that's your governing structure where you have elders, well, that's part of the elders' role, is to protect the vision of the church, to make sure that is being pursued, protected, realized, an important part of the church.
So explain what it looks like to control the vision, because I think sometimes micromanagers and leaders who actually don't empower anybody, they excuse their micromanagement because everything is a vision issue. So it's like, well, the reason that I'm having to be involved in this is because this is a vision issue. So explain what you mean.
That's a great question and a great clarification, because you're exactly right. Everything's not the vision. You know, in the church context, for example, our mission is to make disciples. And you should also know, I don't get hung up in terms like mission, vision, all the, you know, you can call those, you can interchange those many times. I'm talking about in the church, our mission, our vision is God-given to make disciples. Well, it's my role as a senior leader to make sure we're making disciples. And so I could kind of use that as an evaluation, if you will. I give one example. When we got to our last church, we had a cafe. Well, the cafe was losing a lot of money, and so I loved the cafe. I was glad that we had the cafe.
You just liked going there for lunch.
I liked going there for lunch, and I had a good lunch. But we couldn't keep doing it if it lost money, unless it furthered the vision. So I had to say to people, look, this has to break even, make a profit, or have an evangelical purpose, because our vision as a church is too important not to be doing that. So we can't invest money in something that's not a part of the vision of what God has called us to do.
Gotcha. So it's okay for a ministry to lose money. If we're investing a lot of money in college ministry, we may not break even, so to speak, but we're choosing to do that because we believe we're going to make disciples of college students. You're looking at the cafe and you're going, look, we just have this thing. It exists, but there's not a clear connection to why we need it if our goal is to make disciples.
Absolutely. Plenty of restaurants in town.
Got it. All right. What's the next, thing you try to control?
Well, it's a staff culture. You know, I think for senior leaders, it's a key part of shaping the culture of the organization. What does it feel like to work here? What is the staff morale going to be like? What is our approach to our structure going to be like? Is it going to be really bureaucratic? Is it going to be very freeing? What's the working atmosphere like? That is many times shaped by the senior leadership. And many times it's shaped by what the senior leader does as much as what they say. And so, for example, I'll give an example there. When I got to Emmanuel, I didn't know what the structure, what the culture was. But the first day I went in and I had, dress pants on and a nice shirt. I didn't have a tie, but you know, but that wasn't necessarily the culture that I wanted. I wanted to be able to wear jeans if I wanted to. And so
you wanted to be able to wear shorts and flip flops. Don't act like you wanted to be able to wear jeans.
Well, when it was hot, you know, somebody said, you wear shorts. I had somebody come up to me in a grocery store one time and say, I've never seen my pastor in shorts before. I can't believe I'm seeing you in shorts. And I said, well, my legs get hot. You know, but
that's a pastor tip right there. You wear shorts, but you always keep a pair of pants in your office in case you have to go to an important meeting.
Hey, that's exactly right. I keep dress clothes in the closet, ready to change at any given time. But I wanted a culture that was more relaxed. So in order to do that, I had to start wearing more relaxed clothes. Now, that's not an excuse for anything inappropriate or anything like that. But I wanted to just change that part of our culture as a staff. Same with staff meetings. I'm not a chit chatter, as you know, and yet I'm integrated or built into our staff culture a time for just chit chatting, for just playing games, even for having conversation, because I knew we wanted that kind of culture that was where people enjoyed being there and wanted to be there. So staff culture is a huge part of what a senior leader helps to shape.
So on this one about controlling the staff culture, something that I remember you doing and remember you saying at when you were at Emmanuel is that you micromanaged who you added to the team initially. Mm. And I actually don't know if you ever stopped doing that at Emmanuel. But what was the thought process for that? What did you mean by micromanaging who you add to the team?
Well, who we added to the team was going to determine the staff culture at the end of the day, and our ability to bring the changes and the revitalization that we were trying to do. Micromanaging the hiring is not something I want to do. It's not one of these five that I would, or six or seven or whatever the number is. It's not one that I want to control long-term. I love delegating that. You know, hire whoever you want as your assistant, hire whoever you want as a maintenance person. But in the early days, when we're trying to change an entire church and culture, who we add to the team is incredibly important. And I just happen to have a fair amount of success in hiring good people. And so I wanted to speak into that at every level. And, you know, without getting too personal, there were some on the team at the time who just, they weren't the kind of culture I was trying to create. For instance, if you walk down the hall and they won't even smile at you, or they're they're not good participants in all that you're trying to do. You know, it's not even fun to be around. That's not a culture that I'm looking for. And so we wanted to, at every level, in every position, make sure we were putting the right kind of people to create the kind of culture we wanted to have.
Gotcha. That's good.
The third one is the organization's pursuit of excellence. The organization's pursuit of excellence. People are never going to push for more excellence than the level that's set by senior leadership. In other words, if I want us to have really top quality worship, regardless of the style, I'm not talking about it, but quality of worship, then I have to set an example by pushing myself for excellence in the message. Now, I'm not going to be, you know, name your best preacher out there. I'm not going to be Nate Edmondson, you know, but I have to push myself to have the best quality message that I can produce, because if I don't, then I'm saying to whatever the other area is, whether it's preschool ministry, children ministry, student ministry, worship ministry, it's okay to be subpar. You know, it's okay to be, you know, I didn't have time to get to write a good message this week. No, it's not okay. And that's why I have to prepare for meetings and be prepared, so that, because I want to put that standard out there that there's a quality we're looking for, a standard of excellence, and that's established by senior leadership. The fourth one is the moral value of the moral integrity, if you will, of the organization. And that includes the character, the sense of honesty, the sense of respect. That's many times set by the moral character of the senior leader. And that's a hard one. I mean, that's a really hard one, because I realize whenever people, and let me give you an example there. If I have coarse talking in my language towards other people, towards, you know, just jokes that I tell or demeaning comments that I make, even just me and another staff member, that's setting a standard for the organization that's unhealthy. So if I tell jokes about women or jokes about other, you know, just anything, that's setting a standard in our organization that frankly I'm not happy with. And so the moral character, the moral integrity of our organization is mine to protect and mine to, again, control is not a good word, but I have to be conscious of that always.
That's really good.
And that goes with the way I treat my wife, the way I treat her in public, the way I treat her not in public, the way I treat her online, the things that I say about her in staff meetings and those sort of things is very, very important. And the same with our kids and grandkids. And the last one is this, the things that I control is the velocity of change, the speed of change. Senior leadership sets the pace with which you work. The pace of change, the pace of innovation, and that's mine to control. The staff is going to perform or try to perform at the pace I set for them, and this is so critically important. One, so there's two aspects of that. One is you've got to be changing. You know, nothing changes a constant. And leaders promote change. And so I have to be continually introducing new ideas and new change to the organization. Now, thankfully, I always have a new idea, so I can do that pretty well. So that's part of the thing that I control is introducing new initiatives into the organization. The second part of that, and this is where there's a lot of leaders out there that need to hear this, I can have a million new ideas a day, but our team can't handle a million new ideas every day. And so I have to discipline myself to not be introducing so much change and so much innovation and so quickly that our team simply can't keep up, and it burns them out. It bums them out. It ultimately runs them out. You know, it gets rid of good people because they can't keep the pace going, that an unreasonable pace that I'm setting for them.
Well, the other part of that is you have to know the context in which you're leading. So I watched you when you were the leader at Grace in Clarksville, the church plant. And because it was a church plant, the pace at which the church even could adapt to change was so much faster than when you were the pastor at Emmanuel, which is over 100-year-old church. So when you're at Grace, the culture, and I worked at Grace and I worked at Emmanuel, the culture at Grace was, you know, if you were a staff member and you had an idea, you pretty much had permission to try it. I mean, like, that was very much, it was very fast paced and very fun to brainstorm. And if you couldn't brainstorm and come up with new ideas, you probably didn't enjoy working there. On the flip side, at Emmanuel, the worship leader there, Bo Warren, we both love him and he's a great friend. And he described the way that you led at Emmanuel like a rubber band that you would stretch out. And you could always tell if the rubber band was getting pulled too much in one direction that you needed to loosen in another area. And I think that's a good illustration.
That's a great illustration. I never heard that.
Yeah. So you were I think you were different at Emmanuel in that it wasn't just the staff you were concerned about. It was also the church. And even though you're wired to have 1,000 new ideas every day and you're wired to do something new and see things move forward and progress and all of that, you knew that the church couldn't handle that. And so
it was a 100-plus-year-old church. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just, you know, sometimes staff members couldn't always see what you were seeing. So if student ministry was about to do this, you know, brand new thing, and it was going to require all of these, you know, it was going to require the church to wrap their mind around the new program, then you might say no to a change that the worship ministry or the senior adult ministry or, you know, the discipleship ministry or whoever, you might say no to something that they were wanting to do because you knew that the organization wasn't going to be able to handle brand new things in both areas. And I think it was your job, and I mean, it was also your leadership team, so it wasn't just you, but it was your job with those leaders to make sure that the church as a whole wasn't doing 50 new things this year.
Absolutely. So that's a great point, a great illustration. And in an established organization, so you have to look at the organization, how much change can they take? And it's going to be harder in an established church. I'll never forget a young staff member coming in one time and saying something to the, I don't remember exactly how they said it, but it was a great, great guy. I loved the guy. But I remember him saying something like, everything stays the same around here. I just wish we could change something. And I just, at the time, it didn't strike me well because I'm like, wow, you don't have a clue. You know, we've been at that point, we'd probably been there 4 years and changed just about everything. It was a completely different church. And so it coined a phrase that I've used many times since then. Sometimes when it feels like snail pace to us as leaders, the pace of change, it feels like rocket pace to the church. When they're seeing everything, it just feels like everything's changing to them because they're not on the inside seeing that. And so you do have to consider the context when you're looking at the speed of change. We'll probably talk about church revitalization at some point, probably several podcasts on that. And I will talk about a great deal about the speed of change. In fact, we probably should do a podcast just on change and how to go about that. But I have seen so many leaders just kind of blow up the church and actually ruin their potential to be really effective leaders in the context because they didn't control this velocity, the speed of change. So incredibly important.
That's great. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Pops.
Absolutely. Thank you again. Let's do this again.
Thanks for listening to the Ron Edmondson Leadership Podcast. For more information about Ron, check out ronedmondson.com. Have you listened to the Group Answers podcast yet? The one hosted by Chris Surratt and Brian Daniel? They're part of our Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. And they recently talked about virtual small groups, the future state of Sunday school, and they interviewed Andrew Peterson. Just look up Group Answers on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today.